Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you from all over the world. Today, we're going to explore how creating different spices with your foods unlocks and enhances the nutrient bioavailability, meaning you're better able to get more of the nutrient into your system, depending upon the combination or how you go about it, and I'll share that with you. Also, America ranks where? In all the major countries, the 55 leading countries of the world, when it comes to our healthcare system? Wow, you won't believe it. That's Bloomberg. And then how even our brains get stacked as we age in these folds. They become less able to function. Well, how can we prevent that? Newcastle University, and I'll share you how we can keep our brains younger, even physiologically younger. And also mixing energy drinks and alcohol can affect your brains, much like cocaine, Purdue University on that. And boosting levels of one particular antioxidant can help resist a lot of age-related decline, Oregon State University, and a lot more. Also today, you're going to hear from Sirius President Assad in a challenging interview, and also we will take on some of the White Helmets propaganda. We're only listening to one half the equation in the United States. Also, why third-party vote is not a wasted vote, and you shouldn't vote for the lesser of two evils, the Young Turks. I'll also be giving you some new information about how AT&T secretly spies and over the whole hemisphere, and how long they've been doing it, on every single phone call you make, and every time you get into a car and you have one of the devices that the guidance systems, they're following you, GPS tracking. They're tracking, they can listen to anything you say in the car, by the way. And when you take a look at all the money that we spend on the military industrial complex that is functionally worthless, why can't we spend that money on where we need it in the United States? So do we really need all those overseas bases? Do they really need to be spending all this money? We'll deal with that. Also, it's official, injecting the wastewater from fracking caused Kansas's biggest earthquake. That's important. So why haven't we been talking about that in the media, how hydrofracking increases earthquakes? And the big one out there was 4.9. That's a big quake, biggest in Kansas' history. What if it gets bigger? Well, if we're not talking about it, we won't be prepared for it. So we have a lot to share with you today. Let's begin. I like to include a lot of spicy ingredients when I'm cooking. My kitchen has a whole lot of herbs and seasonings. And just to enhance the meal's taste, but also it enhances the way the foods are actually broken down. Give you an example. If you're using turmeric, which is the spice that they use in curry, it's very tasty, but more importantly, turmeric has curcumin, the active ingredient in turmeric, and that is so good for our heart, for stopping cancer cells from metastasizing, for helping to prevent cells from becoming cancerous. But it's very difficult to digest, very difficult to absorb, unless you put pepper in the dish. So let's just say that you made some brown rice, and you have turmeric in the brown rice. Add black pepper, and the black pepper mixes with the turmeric, and that makes it more potent, easier to digest, enhances its absorption by over 2,000%. Let me repeat that. Curcumin, which is the active ingredient in turmeric, has the ability to halt the production of cancer cells. It's an enormously powerful antioxidant. It can slow down the aging process. It can prevent cancer. But when you take it by itself, it's very poorly absorbed. But when you sprinkle black pepper, you enhance curcumin's absorption by over 2,000%. Now, let's say that you're in the Mediterranean, and you're having a typical Mediterranean meal. Not all, but frequently they will have fish, generally locally grown fish, raised fish. In fact, if you've ever gone down to the wharfs, which I have, I wanted to see how this actually occur. It's very similar to when I was in the Caribbean, in Barbados, in Trinidad, in Jamaica, in the Dominican Republic. It's the same way. Early in the morning, the women go down, and they sit on stools, and they have two buckets in front of them. These buckets are normal gallon buckets filled with water, and it's generally with a, depends upon the country, a thatched hut or a tin roof. Either way, it's still hot. The men have frequently gone out late at night, and they come back in at sunrise, and they generally have these big bags, burlap bags, and they go in and they show the women what they have, and the women then select which fish they want, and they negotiate on a price. And then the women pour the fish into the buckets, and then they do the entrailing. They cut them down and take out the inside, then they put them in the water and rinse it and put it in the other bucket, and then that's what they sell throughout the day. Generally, hotels do not come down because most of the fish are too small. And they do the same way in the Mediterranean. And they'll get all kinds of fish. And their guys are specialized. Some guys specialize in going after squid. Others, octopus. Others, different types of fish. And then they bring it in. So you, in both countries, you're getting fish in the diet. In the Mediterranean, most of the diet is made up of whole grains, pastas, beans. They love beans. And they use all kinds of beans and different mashes and purees as well as in soups. And, of course, fruits are everywhere, and they frequently end the meal with fruit. Now, a simple process for those who eat fish, this is those who only eat fish, if you have wine, red wine, with your fish, which they do in Europe, in the Mediterranean, you actually increase the level of the heart-healthy omega-3 fatty acids in your blood. And that lowers your cholesterol level, that protects you against a coronary heart disease, a stroke, and sudden death. Now, if you had fish by itself, it's good. Wine by itself is okay. Together, one enhances the other. The chemicals in the red wine, especially the resveratrol, enhances the fatty acids in the fish. But let's say, like myself, you're a vegan. What do you do then? Not a problem. You can use grape juice, or if you don't want the fish, you can get also your fatty acids from avocados, from plant-based foods, and also you can use some of the nut butters, like walnut butter, flaxseed oil, and you get the same benefit. So it's both ways. I've seen a lot of people having this whole fad of eating egg whites. And you ask, why are you eating the egg whites? Well, they believe that eating the egg whites enhances the protein and nutrition. And point of fact, the vast majority of the nutrients in an egg is in the yolk, not in the white. And if you want good quality fats and you're eating egg white, you got to eat the fats from coconut oil or coconuts. Avocados are your single best. But right behind those are almonds and walnuts, pumpkin seeds, and that enhances the nutrients in a salad. So when you combine good fats with vegetables, you actually reduce inflammation that could lead to diabetes, arthritis, or heart disease. So oils, that's why I always make a really good oil for every salad I eat. Now, salads are good. Oil is good. Salads on oil enhance absorption utilization. Again, it's how you put these together. Now, when I cook garlic, I dice it or very thinly slice it. Then I let it sit for about 15 to 20 minutes. And when I'm doing a cooking class sometimes at a retreat, people say, why are you waiting so long to put your garlic in? Most people put the garlic in first. I said, no, you put the garlic in last. Because if you notice in America, we cook at high temperatures, which is bad, and the garlic is frequently blackened. Therefore, it no longer has any medicinal value. And it's a bitter. Whereas if you put the garlic in at the end, then it cooks at a lower temperature, and you just want it to become translucent. But here's the key. When you mince garlic, where you really cut it up in small portions, something happens chemically inside the garlic. And that something is a powerful antioxidant that can kill cancer cells and prevent new ones from forming. It is called allicin, A-L-L-I-C-I-N. And the mincing or chopping of garlic and then waiting about, oh, let's say 10 to 15 minutes allows it to become more active. The finer you chop your garlic, the more allicin will be produced. So it's just, some people like whole cloves. No, you don't use the whole cloves. Some people use it, you know, just in chunks. You don't want it chunks. Finely diced is where you get the most benefit. Now, our healthcare system. This is important because we spend more on our healthcare than any country in the world. It's over $9,300 per person per year. We have more doctors, more hospitals, more clinics, more nurses, more orderlies, more people working within the science of medicine. Upwards of almost 2 million people working. We spend over $3.5 trillion this year, and it goes up every year. It's about 17% of our gross domestic product. So clearly we should be getting some good value. We're not. The major diseases are increasing. Deaths from iatrogenesis or medically induced deaths is increasing. Injuries from medical procedures and drugs are increasing. And the only improvement we've seen at all in our healthcare system are those individuals who've stopped smoking or stopped drinking, have made healthy lifestyle choices. And then that shouldn't be given credit to the medical community because they're having nothing to do with it. Advocates for healthier living are the ones that have seeded that field. Here's where we rank in the world, according to Bloomberg. The U.S. healthcare system remains the least efficient in the world. We're ranked 50 out of 55 countries that were assessed. Wow. Our life expectancy of women is actually declining. And not only that, but getting a person to 78.9 years, most of them get there with multiple diseases. So what's the problem? The problem's a big problem, and you have to break it into its pieces. First and foremost, it's profit-based. We should be taking all the profit out of healthcare. We should support medical doctors and pay for their full medical training. We should give them no-fault medical practice insurance so no one can be sued. Why is that important? Because there's an awful lot of people who, rightly or wrongly, for the right or wrong reasons, are suing doctors, hospitals, clinics. There's massive fraud in our healthcare system, Medicaid, Medicare. It's in the hundreds of billions of dollars a year. Defensive medicine, because when a doctor suspects that a patient might sue them, they overdiagnose, they overtreat. They give you procedures that you do not need, but someone has to pay for it. And that's why, if you were to have, let's say, a simple procedure, appendicitis in the United States and versus in Spain. Now, the same quality of treatment but you're going to pay around $700 in Spain. You could pay $37,000 in the United States. A pregnancy delivery without complications can run $16,000 in the United States just to deliver a baby. And then you start getting into heart surgery, brain surgery. Now you can go into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And not everyone's insurance covers all of it. Frequently you have, even with Medicare B, you can have 80% paid for, 20% not. And unless you have other companies covering it, that comes out of your pocket. And that is why 10 of the last 20 years, the number one reason for personal bankruptcy was medical bills. Obamacare, as I have said from the beginning, was a travesty. All you had to do was look at who was sponsoring it, the insurance industries and the hospital associations. Now you have a disaster, and it can no longer be hidden. I even have an email that I was shown from the Clinton campaign, and I'll read what it says here about this from David Sorda from International Business Times, quote, Hillary Clinton's campaign was no fan of a major bailout measure to create a universal health care system, at least according to documents from her campaign chairman's email account. The emails from John Podesta's account last November coincided with Clinton's trip to the swing state of Colorado, where health insurers were funding the opposition to a ballot measure that would create a single-payer health care system in the state. Podesta, in the email correspondence about Clinton's 2015 trip to Colorado, was talking about what she should be saying and doing, and this also included her chief staff person, Huma Abedin, and they went on to talk about how they should not be supporting this. So the takeaway message is that Hillary Clinton will not, does not, and never will support a universal health care because she has simply taken too many dollars from the insurance industry, big pharma, and the hospitals. And when you get that kind of money and into the millions of dollars to your foundation and to you for these lectures, and then you align with them. Also, Hillary Clinton was given the task of creating a national health program when her husband was in office. It was all done in secret, but we managed to uncover that there were 480 plus people on her committee, advisory committee. All of them, every single one, came from the insurance industry, big pharma, and the for-profit hospital groups. We mounted a formidable campaign to challenge it. Now, those of us who work in the field of public health for decades, who understand what causes disease and the best way of approaching the treatment, not one of us were invited ever to give any testimony or input. It's all a stacked deck, and that's how it works. So that's one of the reasons that we have a healthcare system that doesn't have health in it. Now, what's the solution? Here's the solution to our completely corrupt, profit-driven healthcare system. One, pay for the doctors to go to school so they don't have a financial burden, and then give them a living wage, a good living wage, like, $200,000 a year for the doctors and no debt. Give them that money starting an internship and residency so that they don't have $500,000 and then are forced to do additional procedures, additional tests, additional x-rays in order to make money. And a lot of them do that. Then take away any liability to the doctor, set up an independent fund of 1% of the fees that come in, and from that, you will properly compensate people for the actual damages of those legitimate complaints that exist, and it thwarts those who are just looking to cash in, and they're all their lawyers and looking to make a buck for nothing. Next, select a surgeon general who has a proven record of promoting the least invasive, least toxic medicines. Take the process of approving medicines away from the FDA and give that to an independent group who have no affiliation with any financial group for evaluating the safety and efficacy of medicines. So at least we're not getting people, over 50% of the people sitting on a committee at the FDA, saying, yeah, let's approve this vaccine, when they are getting money from that very vaccine company or that drug company. Next, start to hold any corporation accountable personally with revocation of their charter if they knowingly promote any drug that they had knowledge was dangerous, and then bring criminal charges against the people. Watch how quickly bad medicines and vaccines simply dissipate. Take away the indemnification of all vaccine makers. Make them liable. You can't have it both ways. You can't say the vaccines are safe and effective when you have no science whatsoever to prove that, and then subsidize the vaccine makers so they keep all the profits. It's the single most profitable area of medicine today. They'll be making upwards of $100 billion a year based upon the more than 160 vaccines they have in the pipeline without a single capacity for anyone, no matter how damaged, to seek redress against the people making those drugs. So if there's no downside, you can make any drug you want, no matter how toxic. You can't be sued. Take that away from them. Then create small clinics in every community in America that promote preventative medicine. Make classes in school mandatory to understand the nature of illness and show the environmental impact, what in our environment causes illness. For example, now the average person would not know this, but this is the latest, that we now know that in the United States alone, $340 billion a year is it's costing us because of toxic products we take in. Things like plastic bottles, flame retardants, food cans, detergents, cosmetics, and pesticides cost U.S. twice as much as the entire European Union. You're dealing with 530 million people in the European Union and about 322 million in the United States. Why? Why do more people have less disease by half? Simple. They have regulations. They use the legal concept that you must prove your product safe. We, on the other hand, use a market-driven concept of innocent till proven guilty. But who exactly is supposed to prove that a chemical that goes into a plastic bottle that leaches out when it's hot, who's going to do the research? No one. We're only going to find out after years of using, being exposed to a toxin that's in our bodies, and there are over 100,000 man-made products that end up in our bodies, and none of these have been proven safe. So now we know that the old model of parts per million don't work. We can have something toxic at parts per billion. So we have to bring in Ralph Nader to reconstruct the Environmental Protection Agency and other agencies to make sure that any product that goes into the marketplace has been proven at the cost of the manufacturers that it's safe, and not have any industry-supported people on any of those panels. That way we get safe products into the marketplace that have research done by independent scientists, and then in every town, city in the United States, a person can go in a clinic and learn all about how to lose weight healthily, lower their blood pressure, lower their cholesterol, clean up their arteries, help de-inflame their brain from Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia, ALS, multiple sclerosis, how to exercise, how to eat right, the promotion of locally grown food, how to de-stress, have de-stress centers also where people can either have counseling to help them with their emotional problems, the life issues they're confronted with, especially younger people. And that way, you're preventing at least half of all illness. You've taken the profit out, eliminate all the insurance industries, have universal health care, and now we're spending only into the hundreds of billions instead of $3.5 trillion, and people are living longer, and they're healthier. That's the way we should do it. Also, there's new research from the Nanyang Polytech Institute in China that garlic can lower cholesterol levels substantially, and it really is good. Also lowers triglycerides. So once again, There are thousands of studies on the importance of garlic, and we should be eating more garlic. And from Oregon State University, boosting levels of antioxidant glutathione. Gluta, G-L-U-T-A, thione, T-H-I-O-N-E, can help resist age-related decline. I'll quote this. Researchers at Oregon State University have found that a specific detoxification compound, glutathione, helps resist the toxic stresses of everyday life. But its levels decline with age, and this sets the stage for a wide range of age-related health problems. A new study published in the journal Redox Biology highlights the N-acetylcysteine, or NAC, that is used in high doses to medically detoxify a person, but it also enhances glutathione. By the way, alpha-lipoic acid and grapeseed extract can also help in that process as well. So we want to get more glutathione back into our body, and we can do that by taking more NAC in our body and alpha-lipoic acid. And from Purdue University, drinking highly caffeinated alcoholic beverages triggers changes in the brain similar to taking cocaine, and the consequences last into adulthood as an altered ability to deal with rewarding substances. So stay away from the energy drinks completely. Just stay away from them. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us.
Ever since I met you, seems I can't forget.
I'd like to welcome all of you. We're here to empower people, insights and information that can make a difference. By the way, the letter that I had sent to Michael Moore has gone viral. I've had a lot of feedback on it. And yesterday, a person, while I was walking up the street, came over and says, you're Gary, I see you. He said, I read the letter. He said, what do you think Hillary Clinton is likely to do for my generation? I said, how old are you? He said, I'm 32. I'm a millennial. And I said, what do you do? He said, well, I graduated from college, then I went back and got a graduate degree, which I thought would make it easier for me to work. But that didn't work out so well. And he said, so now I'm doing work unrelated. I'm doing proofreading at this agency, this ad agency. I'm at the base of the pay scale. And he said, so what do you suggest is a likely outcome of a Hillary Clinton election that Michael's telling us we should all support? I said, well, we wouldn't have universal health care because Hillary is adamantly opposed to it, and her WikiLeaks mail shows us the truth. And I said, so you're not going to be able to get universal health care, which we should have. Any civilized society should have all of its citizens, no exception, be able to be helped if they have anything wrong with them without that being charged to them. We would save at least $2.5 trillion if we took the profit out of the medical care system, and we would live longer lives. But on other issues, let's just look. So I wanted to prepare, and I asked him to listen today, and I wanted to prepare just a brief list of things that how they will be impacted, the millennials will be impacted with Hillary Clinton's presidency. First, millennials face a lot of challenges that no generation in history faced. And that's unfortunate. How many millennials are there? About 88 million. We're dealing with a large segment of the American population. They have this duality. They are the most educated generation in American history. They have far more degrees than any other generation, yet they have some of the poorest quality education and are the least literate on important subjects. The fact that a person has a degree today doesn't necessarily in and of itself mean that they are worldly, that they understand history, civics, society, geology, geography, and the meaning of life. So we've actually had better education historically. So that puts them at another disadvantage. Also, 40% of the unemployed workers are millennials. Now, how many unemployed are there? We have 102 million Americans who have worked and are not now working. That means you're dealing with about 41 million millennials out of work. That's why there's so many millennials living at home. That brings additional stress to those at home, as well as the millennial. Now, what are the important issues that could help a millennial? If we had someone like Jill Stein, or for that matter, Bernie Sanders, and who should be a write-in for those who believe in Bernie's message in those few states where he still will be on the ballot as a write-in person, or you can write him in. But in any case, the number one is the poverty, then the economy, then social equality, then climate change. Those are the top four. So let's just take a look at the top four issues that most millennials believe are important. Poverty. We right now have more poor children living, their family living on less than $2 a day. That used to be what a person in the Sudan would live off, or less. We have 2 to 3 million Americans living on that. It's no publicity on that at all. Everything that the government tells us about poverty is a lie. How many unemployed? 5.1%? No. It's 27% unless you're an African American, then it goes up to around 44%. If you're an unemployed, or if you're a millennial African American or Latino, it's over 55%. So they've lied to pacify the population that somehow you may not be working, but everyone else is working. No, they're not. Also, we have 18 million children, meaning under age of 18, and we have 18 million of them who are food insecure. Food insecure is about as honest of dealing with the issue of starvation, gross malnutrition, nutrient deficiencies in children as an Apocalypse Now, Martin Sheen's character when he went to kill the mad major, played by Marlon Brando, saying, "What's your mission? Terminate with extreme prejudice." Well, terminate with extreme prejudice doesn't sound as bad as I'm going to go and slit his throat. And when you say, we've got kids in America who are malnourished because their families don't have enough food for them, so they're having to skip meals, and it gives a different picture if you say food insecure. But we have 18 million. Or let's just put it a different way. If we took every single person living in New York City, including its boroughs, and we removed all of them out, and we put kids who are food insecure in, we would have to have double the housing. You'd have to have 2 New York City, Queens, Brooklyn, Bronx, Staten Island, Harlem's, just to house all the hungry kids in America. One point, we said, well, kids at least are getting education. Yeah, but what about the 1.6 million that don't have a place to go to when they walk out of school? There's no home. We only count people who are in shelters as being homeless. They're under 1%. Then you intentionally, and with malice aforethought, you city officials, you state officials, or you're dumb as a brick, and you may be a combination of both, why don't you count the 99%? Why don't you come with me to Titusville, Florida, and I'll show you 16,000 homeless vets living that you haven't counted one? Why don't you come to Los Angeles? I'll show you where they're living. I went out there and filmed them for Poverty Inc. and the other film I did on homeless vets, American Vets, Forgotten and Betrayed. You've forgotten them and you betrayed them. We have over, just do the math, and you don't have to have any background in human statistics to appreciate this. We have never been given the total number of homes foreclosed on. Why? Because we have what is called the shadow housing market. What is that? That means that the banks who've taken back, or the mortgage companies who've taken back people's homes, could not put them all on the market at the same time, or you would depress the market. The value of homes would come down 20 to 30%. So they want to be able to take a house back. A, they get to keep all the money they made for the down payment and all the years a person was paying. B, they get to write off the expense at the high end of the value at 100% deduction. That means that they can apply that 100% loss. And this is what Donald Trump did. But the banks do it every single day. They apply 100% write-off, and that's against all their other future earnings and current earnings. Then they end up selling these or renting them out in tranches, and that's one hedge fund has 200,000 homes, more or less, and they rent them out. But they're not renting them out at a normal level. They're renting them out at very high prices, and they provide no services. They're not superintendents to go with this. So if you're renting one of these houses and you don't know that who your landlord really is, and something goes wrong, you get a toilet that's broken, who are you going to call? There's no one to call. It's they're squeezing every drop out of exploiting the poor. So now you have probably in the neighborhood of 5 million homes that are not actively on the market. That would depress the whole market. They'll be brought out in time, mainly as rentals today, and they can make more money out of the rental. So none of that is being counted. Now, how many people live in the average home? Let's take 4. So let's just say that you have 7 million homes at 4. 7 times 4 is 28. 28 million Americans are technically homeless. But then they engage in couch surfing. They go to a relative's home or a friend's home, and they stay in a basement. They convert an attic. They convert a garage. I've seen it. I took in homeless people, 8, for years, to help them out. But you got to take them in. They have no money. You got to feed them. So I know what it's like to help homeless people. Question. Did the Clintons take in any homeless people? I'm just curious. Maybe they did. Maybe I'm not aware of it. I can bring the homeless people on the air that I've taken in and fed and gave comfort to and talk with and try to get them back on their feet. So the people who talk about they're concerned with you. They're absolutely concerned. Michael Moore. Michael, have you taken any homeless people in? Given them one of your baseball caps? Says, I'm like you. Have you? You got the money. Got the resources. Just amazing, the palpable hypocrisy in our society. People say they care for you. Do they? How much do they care? What are they willing to sacrifice? The entertainers, with few exceptions, one exception would be Martin Sheen. He is a real decent human being. And I know what he has done to help people. And there's some others like him, but the vast majority, they show up on Thanksgiving to, get their publicist says it'll look good for your image. You'll look like a human being that cares instead of a spoiled, coke-headed brat with your coke-headed agent and your coke-headed producer, director, and all the other coke-headed idiots in Hollywood. Boy, I don't like Hollywood at all. I don't even go out there to lecture anymore. Anyhow, because it's just a city of lies. Not California, not Los Angeles, Beverly Hills, the Hollywood community. I have no respect for what they do, because they're just dealing in their own fantasy world like they're all entitled. All week spending their days talking with their agents, figuring out how can we get to the next place to have someone pay attention to our relevance by taking our picture. Well, when was the last time you opened up some of those big homes, got plenty of bedrooms, and helped some people that don't have any place but the bare ground, the cold, the rain? If we really care about people, shouldn't we do more? And if we use fear and insecurity as the reason why, I don't know who these people are. These are strangers, they could kill us. Then spend some time to get to know them. Because we could do something. But our government lies about how many of them there are. There are tens of millions of homeless Americans. and our government doesn't give a damn about them. Nor the in fact, it's so bad that now municipalities and 68 different municipalities have made it illegal to feed them. I found that hard to believe until I was there one morning. As the mist was rising, I saw thousands standing in line quietly. Now, I'd been there since 6, so they had to be there hours early to go into what's called a stand-down, a big field where tables were set up where vets could go in, and the one, they might get some boots, another one, there'd be someone shaving, give them a haircut. There'd be a dentist, couldn't do anything, but he could at least examine them, tell them what they need done. Someone give him a bag of food, and one of the people giving him a lot of food, and I really commend him for it, was a church group. And I said, this is only once a year. One bag of food is not going to last very long. Well, we used to come every Sunday and give homeless people a dinner. We'd make a dinner for them in the city park where people go. Anybody can go and use the cooking facilities, you know, the barbecue facilities and the picnic tables. But then we were told we couldn't give food to homeless vets. We could give it to poor people, but not homeless vets. I said, well, what's the distinction? I don't know. They just said that if we show up again as a church group to give free food to homeless vets, they'll arrest us. I challenged the mayor. You got to see that confrontation. I am not impressed by authority, celebrity, ever. And you got to watch that confrontation between myself and the mayor when he started to BS. And I believe we should be challenging every community in America that says it's against the law to feed a homeless person, to house a homeless person, to help them. Defy authority. Defy it. Get in their face. Care about people, not some arbitrary, capricious, sociopathic personality saying, we don't care about them. You shouldn't either. If they're poor, it's because they're lazy. Or just turn on any of the conservative radio programs, and Rush Limbaugh, and he'll explain why all these people are poor. Yeah, Rush. Sure they are. So exactly how's Hillary going to help the poor? She isn't. She's contributed to their poverty. Michael, did you go back and look at her husband's plan, which was her plan of taking millions off the poverty rolls, taking away the food for their kids, places for them to live? Did anyone know what happens when you no longer have enough of a subsistence check coming in that you can't afford to live in a place? You're homeless. You're without food. Where were all the good Democrats, the Blue Dog Democrats? Where were the Republicans? Well, we know where the Republicans were. We don't even have to ask that question. That's like asking Donald Trump to play a game of chess. So exactly, what are we going to do for the millennials in poverty? We're not. What could we do? We could take the most educated group in American history, and in the communities where they have lived, or in cities where there are communities that need help, we could have them use their skills, their knowledge, their time and expertise in helping to take these hundreds of thousands of decrepit buildings and blocks and have the city, the state, and the federal government join together and have them all rehabilitated or demolished and build whole new centers, living centers with family units, single units, assisted living centers for older people, clinics to help people with their health problems, counseling, community gardens, and cultural events to help people engage in culture, athletic events, family gardens. That's what we should do. And think of the millions of people who would be helped. So it's not difficult to figure out what to do. But this woman will not do it under any circumstances. So you're only going to have more people poor, more children hungry, more people out of work, more of your generation, Michael, the fellow from yesterday, we're going to have more of your generation going into debtors' prisons. Oh, and by the way, the ability to, let's say, lessen the burden, the email showed that it was about helping the banks renegotiate. They still control it. They still profit from it. And also, you can't get out of it, your debt, student debt, with bankruptcy. They made sure of that. You can thank Dodd and others from Connecticut, who now heads what the Motion Picture Association's Guild, for all that. So you should be getting all of the millennials together in a national campaign to demand the forgiveness of student debt and the bankruptcy laws. Two things that would help you. Also, climate change. Hillary Clinton is for, and her email show, she's for nuclear. Nuclear is the most damaging possible, even more than coal, even with all the fire-burning coal plants causing CO2, because nuclear, you can't get rid of it. It doesn't go away. Every single spent fuel rod ever created still exists and is still hot, radioactive. We have no places to put these. They're in pools. They're vulnerable to terrorism. They're vulnerable to accident. Just look at Fukushima. It's also expensive to make. We're subsidizing New York State. The governor now wants us to support the nuclear industry to the tune of $7 billion. Well, $7 billion should be spent on wave power up New York State and in our riverways, and also solar and wind. We have some nice areas, and there's a whole new generation of wind turbines today that don't have the big blades that could impact birds and make sounds that are very challenging to people who live within a mile of them. There's new ones that have very tiny blades, a whole new type of technology that's revolutionized wind power, making it safe, ecologically sound, good investments. That's what we should be doing. And geothermal, and we have geothermal in New York State. No, they give it to this organization. Also, Hillary Clinton supports hydrofracking. Now, I read at the beginning of the program, and it's here. I'll read it again for you. This is from EchoWatch. It's official: injection of fracking wastewater caused Kansas's biggest earthquake. The largest earthquake ever recorded in Kansas, a 4.9 magnitude trembler that struck northeastern of Milan, has been officially linked to wastewater injection into deep underground wells, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. The epicenter of that extremely rare earthquake struck near a known fracking operation. So we also know that thousands and thousands of earthquakes that have occurred since January in Oklahoma are due to hydrofracking. She supports hydrofracking. She supports the oil industry. In fact, it was interesting. She supports women. Okay, good. Except if you're a woman from Kuwait, the United Arab Emirates, Jordan, Saudi Arabia in particular, then no, she supports gay rights. Unless you are from Saudi Arabia or Kuwait, where they kill gays. Now, if you know that a country's official policy is to kill, first you have to detect, then you have to punish them and do so publicly, and you're killing a whole segment of society, the gays, shouldn't that be enough of outrage that you create a program to say this is wrong? You should be loving and respecting a person for their uniqueness, not beheading them or bashing them or lashing them. But not Hillary Clinton, because she got $25 million and then she got $10 million from Saudi Arabia alone. Plus, she got money for the military-industrial complex to the tune of $162 billion. And then those people in turn gave Clinton money and her foundation money. So you're not going to see women's rights improved, environmental rights improve. She's not ever embraced geothermal power. She has no knowledge whatsoever of wave power, which will be the most important in the future, and solar and wind. She's still with the clean coal, just like Barack Obama. So you're not going to win there. And then you've got to be realistic and say, okay, she's not helping with poverty. She's not helping with the economy. She's going to make sure that those people who have power continue to offshore jobs to other countries where she has relationships, good relationships with countries that are only too happy to make a deal to take a factory in America that had union help and support and safeguards and ship it to a place where there's no safeguards, minimal wage, slave labor. And she got a lot of money from the private prison group, so you can expect her to double down and have more private prisons and more people who are poor, and because they cannot pay their bills, only because they're poor, will be arrested and put into private prisons. They'll be arrested by private security people. They'll have to go through a judge that is private, and the judge is going to charge you. The police are going to charge you for arresting you. The probation officer will charge you for each time you have to go before a probation officer to explain why you're still in jail. The jail will charge you 130 to 150 days to be in a private jail. And we can look at least 1 million to 2 million Americans in one of the biggest growth industries, because the poorer we get, the less people are going to be able to pay. And how many people can't pay? One half of all of Americans who have credit cards or debts are 180 days behind. That means it's in collections. And collections are one of the biggest givers to the Clintons. So you're going to have more people who cannot pay their bills being arrested, put into debtors' prisons, and then you're charged when you're there. So then it's a cycle. Well, if you're already too poor to pay for something, how in the world are you supposed to get out of a jail when the amount that you owed was $40, now you owe $1,000 for being in their prison system for 1 week? Well, you're not supposed to get out. They got you forever. And they just keep increasing the amount. Now, if they make a deal with the state to fill beds, then the state, the taxpayers, have to pay to make sure every bed is filled. So that's what's going to happen to millennials. Already is. Threats, calls of all hours, and then going after your parents as well, especially if they are signed on the student loan. So there is no upside to this presidency of Hillary Clinton, promoted by the Michael Moores, and it's going to get worse. So my suggestion is that you start to organize on issues that millennials can agree upon, and then to protest. And you have the ability to protest now. You can offer your protest vote, which can count for Jill Stein, who is a humanist. If you actually, the others, you know, the nice thing about being a corporate Democrat and a corporate liberal and a corporate conservative and corporate Republican, they have two advantages that we don't have. Now, maybe it's genetic, who knows what it's from, but they never have to worry about a head injury or a heart injury because they've got no brain, they got no heart. Jill Stein has both. They have no sense of compassion. They are detached. That's the sign of a sociopath. Complete emotional detachment. So Jill Stein will defend you. Now, will she lose? Of course she's going to lose. It'd be good to get her 5% of the vote, but that 5% represents the first step in a coalition of all the progressives working together for the next cycle and the cycle after that. It'll take between 4 to 10 years, excluding any environmental catastrophe, for us to be able to show these people what's going to happen. As far as peace, no, you're going to have war. NATO is going to be posturing because Hillary Clinton and all the people around her support NATO and support going after China and going after Russia. Not the smartest thing you could do. Put it in this sense. With all the firepower, the hundreds of thousands of troops, the trillions of dollars spent, all the strategists, the satellites, all the reconnaissance, the total national security, we weren't able to defeat the Taliban. You know, those fellows working with old rifles, some of them initially from the Second World War, and riding on camels and donkeys around Afghanistan, or walking on foot. We couldn't defeat them. And you saw the mess we made in Iraq. we can't defeat the terrorists. So try to explain to me how exactly we're going to defeat China, Russia. Tell me how that's supposed to work. They all have nukes. They all have high technology, and they got a lot more young, smarter people than we have in numbers. And so therefore, my belief is that the next battle fought will be a cyber battle, and they'll win it. And you'll wake up one day, if this happens, and you won't have any electricity or cell phone. You won't have any refrigeration, because they're figuring, instead of risking annihilation with nuclear, that Hillary said she will use, it's on the table, she said, both with Russia and with Iran, they're figuring, we're going to deter that, because they already know that we had planned to use that in Iran. So that cat is out of the bag, and it's not going back in there. And yet you can thank the Clintons for building up the biggest military-industrial complex in history. Now, tomorrow, I'm going to go into depth of why we cannot reduce the budget. We could, but we won't. We'll increase it. And 900 military bases, do we need them? Are they there to help us? No, they don't help us. They cost us. So the money that we're spending each year on the military-industrial complex could pay off all student loans and de-ghettoize America. That's how much we spend in each year. And yet we won't spend a penny for the things we need to. We'll put them where the insiders have control. So that's the answer to Mike from yesterday. But that doesn't mean you don't have power. You do. You just don't know how much power you have. I've said it from the beginning. If every student who believes in a quality education that a public institution should be for free, the tuition free, then join together and have a national strike and get the many teachers that would support you. I know about 150,000 adjunct professors who are having to work second and third jobs because they've been completely exploited in the educational system. They would support you. A lot of very conscientious teachers support you. You'd be able to bring that whole system to a stop, and then you could get reform. Then you become a political force. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
I long to hold you tight.